Strangers, the doomsday clock is set to 85 seconds until midnight. The world is at war, and the people building the most powerful technology in human history are warning, in public, that they might kill us all. Would it be too far-fetched to say that AI could bring about the apocalypse? The second season of Suspicious Minds examines that. On Suspicious Minds, AI and the Apocalypse, host Sean King O'Grady talks to psychologists, philosophers, historians, and theologians to understand how AI intersects with apocalyptic planning, analysis, and debate. And most importantly, to understand if AI could end the world as we know it. Season 2 of the Webby-nominated podcast is out now. Listen to Suspicious Minds wherever you are listening to this podcast. How do you know when a coincidence is truly that, or when it's a clue into connecting unsolved stories? If the circumstances of one death potentially inform another, what sort of evidence confirms the correlation? Can a shared name foretell a shared fate, or is that just a question for the conspiratorial among us? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. Today's episode comes from an email from listener William A. Ashbrook IV. And before we dive in, let me just say this. I do get a lot of emails from listeners with personal or family stories. Unfortunately, I can't cover those that I can't find information about through news media and other sources whose credibility I can assess. Like, if you write in to say that you've seen a lot of ghosts, I'll be like, neat, but I won't cover it on the show because anyone and their mom can say they see ghosts. Unless it's been covered elsewhere, I can't really do much with it. There are, on the other hand, other podcasts that you can send your stories to that will happily give you airtime. All that said, if you email me about a story that has some verifiable information behind it, I will definitely cover it if it fits in with the show's theme. And this one has it all. Mysterious deaths, shoddy media coverage, and whispers of conspiracies. William's email to me started like this, quote, I have a family story that I have considered sharing with a few true crime podcasts over the years, but I've always stopped short. I've been listening to your show for a while now, though, and I believe it might be perfect for it. I feel like you're a bit of a kindred spirit as your humor and the causes you fight for really resonate with me, end quote. Well, first of all, thank you, William. Flattery will get you a long way. The email continued, quote, so for now, I'll give you the facts of the case and some general background, and if it's something you might be interested in, then we can go further into the details. So my great-grandfather and his son, my great-uncle, and my great-uncle's wife were all three U.S. representatives in Congress. So after my great-grandfather, a Democrat, passed away, his son, a Republican, I know, sad face, eventually took his seat in Congress, end quote. Stranger, Will's uncle was a Republican, and he knows I'll have some stuff to say about his politics. Listen, you get what you pay for with me, and Lord knows, most of you are getting this for free. He goes on, quote, what you won't read in those articles is about the unsolved murder of my great-uncle's younger brother, James Jim Ashbrook, who was also my great-uncle. In 1980, my dad found his uncle's abandoned car and eventually his body out on the railroad tracks outside of the small town we're all from, Johnstown, Ohio, where I still live today. He was beaten and strangled. You'd think the murder of a congressman's brother while he was still in office would be a huge news story, but somehow it wasn't. I've done a lot of digging online about it from newspapers at the time, but the information is very scarce. The part that gets really weird is when you look at John's death as well, end quote. I'm leaving out a chunk of the email here, stranger, in order to not give too many spoilers. Quote, I'm hoping for two things. One, to obviously get the story out there in hopes of maybe stirring up information on the case, but also I thought maybe you would have resources that I don't know finding out more about the case. I was thinking about possibly using the Freedom of Information Act to try and get some more official information on the story. My dad is 76 now, and I know it would give him some peace to know that his uncle's story will live on and possibly even be solved one day. I was born in 1987, so this was all before I was even thought of, but it still feels personal to me through my dad. Like I said, he was the one who found Jim's body, and I know how much he loved him and how much of an impact that had on his life. End quote. And then the email pivots to the second death, that of Jim's brother John, a former U.S. representative from Ohio who passed away under mysterious circumstances just 2 years after his brother. Quote, I will tell you now that John was a Republican and a McCarthyist and on the House Un-American Activities Committee. And while I personally don't condone his political stances, I know that my dad loved him very much. End quote. Listen, sometimes we can't choose who we love. Quote, if any of this resonates with you, please email me back and let me know. Even if you didn't end up using it for your show, if there's anything you could do to help us, I would so appreciate it. In closing, thank you for your time and for putting out a kick-ass podcast. And thank you for doing so much to support people who are less fortunate than you. William A. Ashbrook IV. End quote. Well, color me intrigued. When a politician dies, it's usually not that surprising because, let's face it, most of them are already one foot in the grave anyway. So, like, what do you expect? Dick Cheney had 7,000 heart attacks before finally giving up his gnarled and ugly ghost. And all of them, somehow, were in public places and not while he was out fishing by himself. Mitch McConnell is basically just a fright wig away from looking like the Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt. And Donald Trump is using meetings as nap time. But then there's someone like Lindsey Graham, who one minute is definitely not browsing Grindr, and the next minute is just dead. And, like, sure, he was 71, which isn't exactly on the incline of the hill, if you know what I mean, but also, like, he went before McConnell? And when the FBI shows up at your house shortly after your death, one starts to wonder if something fishy went down. Or, as whack job Laura Loomer put it on the platform formerly known as Twitter, quote, I didn't realize 20 FBI agents were needed to convince everyone that Lindsey Graham died from an aortic dissection. Did the toxicology report come back? Two things can be true at once. End quote. I don't know if she's trying to imply that Graham was assassinated or if she was trying to put any doubt to rest. People die all the time. In fact, people die every day. Lots of them. Our bodies are incredibly fragile, and the older we get, the fragiler they become. So while it might be normal for your Uncle John to die suddenly at the age of 53, like strange listener Will Ashbrook's Uncle John did, you might, if your Uncle John, who was a congressman who died quite suddenly at 53 and whose autopsy is sealed, reach out to, I don't know, your favorite podcaster to shed some light on his death and dig into another mysterious and largely overlooked death in the same family. And now that I'm on a hot buttered roll, let's take a quick ad break and get going. Strangers, I honestly could not be more excited for my newest sponsor, AquaTrue. Did you know 3 out of 4 U.S. homes have toxic chemicals in their tap water? Here in Rhode Island, our rivers were so polluted for so long, they were untouchable. And I'm going to be honest, even though they say it's safe now, I'm not about to start drinking straight from the tap. AquaTrue is the countertop water purifier tested and certified to remove 84 contaminants, including chlorine, lead, forever chemicals, and microplastics. Its patented 4-stage reverse osmosis system goes way beyond ordinary filters for pure, healthy water you can trust. No plumbing, no installation. This purifier does way more than your built-in fridge or tap filter and goes beyond what conventional countertop filters do by miles. Clean drinking water is quickly becoming a scarce resource. AquaTrue is an investment for you and your family's health. You will taste the difference and your body will thank you today and down the line. AquaTrue has been featured in Business Insider, Popular Science, and named Best Countertop Water Filter by Good Housekeeping. Join 98% of customers who say their drinking water is cleaner, safer, and healthier. Go to AquaTrue.com now for 20% off your purifier using promo code STRANGE. AquaTrue even comes with a 30-day best-tasting water guarantee. That's AquaTrue.com, AquaTrue.com, promo code STRANGE. John M. Ashbrook came from a political family. His father, William A. Ashbrook, served in the Ohio House of Representatives from 1906 to 1907, at which point he ran and was elected into the United States House of Representatives, where he served until 1921, and then again from 1935 to 1940, when he died at the age of 72. There is very little information on William. Even his Wikipedia page is bereft of citations. He was a Democrat through World War I, Depression-era America, and the rise of Nazism across the pond. Despite his father's politics, however, John was conservative. According to his obituary in the Washington Post, he went to Harvard where he said, quote, "I started out as a conservative, but my professors and what they taught me made me even more so," end quote. Given Harvard's historically liberal, though not progressive, bent, one has to assume that John largely disagreed with his professors so adamantly that it pushed him even further to the right. This would have made sense after World War II. The Republican Party was virulently anti-New Deal, with its promise to lift people out of the devastating effects of the Great Depression. And John brought all of this context to his right-leaning perspective as a U.S. congressman representing Ohio's 17th District from 1961 until his death in 1982. During this time, when Senator McCarthy put together his House Un-American Activities Committee, going after anyone with a whiff of communism about their general person, or honestly just people whose haircut he didn't like, John Ashbrook joined the committee. Ashbrook was so conservative that in their obituary for him in 1982, the Newark Advocate noted, quote, "The American Conservative Union gave Ashbrook a 97% rating, while Ralph Nader's Liberal Congress Watch organization gave him only a 10% rating," end quote. Listen, I'm no political scientist, but I'm pretty sure we all know what criteria the ACU uses to give out their rankings. I browsed their site, and all I can say is that it's a great way to figure out which Democrats to consider voting for. You got a zero ranking from the American Conservative Union? Straight to the top of my list. It's possible he didn't score 100 because he did vote in favor of the Civil Rights Act of 1968, as well as the 24th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which codified, quote, "the right of citizens of the United States to vote in any primary or other election for president or vice president, for electors for president or vice president, or for senator or representative in Congress, shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state by reason of failure to pay any poll tax or other tax," end quote. He also voted in favor of the effectively now dead Voting Rights Act of 1965. Anyway, in 1972, Ashbrook ran for president against Nixon. However, according to the Newark Advocate, quote, "he failed to win even 10% of the vote in any of the primaries and didn't get a single delegate vote at the GOP National Convention," end quote. Ashbrook had more success locally, however. The article continues that in the 1982 U.S. Senate race, quote, "Ashbrook appeared to be on the winning track. A state Republican Party poll released less than 2 weeks ago showed him with 47% support among likely GOP voters," end quote. On April 24, 1982, while in the middle of his 12th congressional campaign, John Ashbrook died suddenly at the age of 53. According to an obituary in the Philadelphia Inquirer, the day after his death, Ashbrook fainted just after 11 a.m. in the building in which the Johnstown Independent, a paper owned and operated by the Ashbrook family, was housed. John had served as publisher of the paper at some point. He was brought to the hospital where he was pronounced dead at 12:28 p.m. The emergency room physician said it appeared to have been a heart attack. However, at autopsy, the coroner found massive hemorrhaging in his stomach and bowels. According to the Newark Advocate, the coroner said the, quote, "blood seepage probably started sometime Saturday morning, 2 to 3 hours before he actually died, and his body would not have exhibited symptoms such as unusual bowel movement that could have alerted the congressman to seek medical help, end quote. In other words, he went from la-di-da fine to dead within a few hours with no warning. It's highly unusual for internal bleeding to result where no injury has happened. It can happen as a result of prolonged bowel or organ disease, but Ashbrook, as far as anyone knew, was the very picture of health. According to the Advocate, quote, the congressman was not on any type of medication, did not take aspirins, and did not consume alcohol or coffee, all believed to contribute to gastrointestinal disorders. The coroner also said emphatically that Ashbrook had no ulcers, end quote. Can you imagine a 53-year-old on no medications? That's what the world was like before direct-to-consumer medication marketing. The doctor noted that the only sign Ashbrook may have had before he died was feeling a little tired. His family noted he hadn't been as peppy as usual that morning, but they had contributed that to exhaustion from his campaign. And just a side note here, because I can't help myself, when I was 9 years old and in Les Miserables on Broadway, I told my dad that I thought one of my castmates, an adult man, was gay. And my dad asked me why I thought that, and I said, oh, you know, Dad, gay men are just peppy. So peppy, for me, has long lived in my lexicon as a code word for gay. Incidentally, that actor I thought was peppy was one of the only ones in the cast who was, indeed, straight. Anyway, that's just a little look under the hood of my brain and the connections it makes to pep. Of course, closeted senators are famously unpeppy when denouncing homosexuality. Where was I? Oh, right. Moving right along. After the break, we'll get back on track in regards to just how John could have died this way. Strangers, I cannot stop talking about my new outdoor sofa from Wayfair. Recently, we had family come to stay and our outdoor space was a hit. My sister even took a nap on our super comfy outdoor sofa. And with our new huge living room sectional from Wayfair, the whole family fit comfortably. Do you have a kid getting ready to head to college? Get their dorm room outfitted at Wayfair for a comfortable transition. At Wayfair, you'll find quality materials that stand up to real life and decor that's built to last. Shop with Wayfair Verified, your shortcut to durable pieces hand-vetted by product specialists using a 10-point quality inspection, testing things like quality of materials, functionality and features, and even how long it takes to build. Create the home you love without overspending. Shop across a wide range of price points to find what's right for you. Read more than 20 million verified 5-star reviews from real shoppers. See real customer photos and feedback before you buy. Join Wayfair Rewards today to get 5% back on every purchase and start saving on your next home upgrade. Head to wayfair.com to shop all things home. That's WAYFAIR.com. Wayfair. Every style, every home. The only sign that something may have been amiss with Ashbrook's health appeared a month before his death when he apparently collapsed after eating a meal. This is according to his nephew, William, who emailed me. I couldn't find much information about this event beyond this mention in an extremely brief piece from United Press International published on March 21, 1982, that read, quote, Representative John Ashbrook, Republican from Ohio, was released from Mansfield General Hospital Saturday after 2 days of testing failed to reveal why he fainted at a restaurant last week. His wife, Jean, reported Sunday that Ashbrook was feeling fine and was back to campaigning. But the 53-year-old U.S. senatorial hopeful is scheduled to undergo more testing Monday at the Cleveland Clinic as an outpatient, end quote. One would hope that if he had been suffering from internal bleeding at that point, they would have noticed it in all the testing, what with the single-payer health insurance our representatives receive. Also, these tests were not mentioned in the coverage of his death a month later. So at first glance, it would seem the fainting had nothing to do with his death. Unless, of course, you are one to believe in conspiracy theories, in which case you might think the episode in March of 82 was some kind of botched assassination attempt, and the episode a month later was a successful one. If you might allow me a brief meander down this side road, it could be worth glancing at so-called conspiracy theories that swirl around the deaths of important people. By now, we know that governments of all stripes, including our own, have ways of silencing people who are causing them trouble. Take John Barnett, the former Boeing employee who came forward with allegations that the company had been cutting corners while its CEO makes a purported $23 million a year. Barnett believed the nickel and diming on the factory floor led to events such as an airplane door flying off mid-flight. In between deposition sessions with Boeing, Barnett was found dead in his truck in a hotel parking lot from what authorities called a self-inflicted gunshot wound. No one in his family thought he was suicidal. Is it possible that Barnett suddenly killed himself just as people were finally listening to his very real concerns about the company he'd risked his security to blow the whistle on? Sure. Is it possible that Barnett's information threatened a company with inextricable ties to our government, and so someone took him out? Also, sure. While Boeing is a private company, according to Joel Rose at NPR, quote, it is such a major piece of the U.S. economy, both as a military contractor and in commercial aviation. It is a huge employer. The U.S. government even has a special bank called the Export-Import Bank that extends financing for overseas buyers. Jokingly, it is called Boeing's bank because the company is such a big beneficiary, end quote. Barack Obama once joked, quote, I'm expecting a gold watch from Boeing at the end of my presidency because I know that I'm on the list of top salesmen at Boeing, end quote. Rose continued, quote, so the U.S. wants airlines and other countries to buy Boeing's planes. And right now, that is the MAX series. Boeing 737 MAX is the company's biggest seller ever, the key to its financial future. In theory, all of this is not supposed to affect how regulators treat Boeing. In the real world, the company has a lot of power. I talked to Jim Hall. He's the former chair of the National Transportation Safety Board, and he says Boeing acts like it's too big to fail. End quote. And call me naive, but it's hard to imagine a private citizen risking life and limb to come out against one of the biggest and most well-connected companies in the world and then kill himself in the middle of finally being heard. And Barnett is, of course, just one example. There are many. Like Val Brokesmit, who blew the whistle on Deutsche Bank's involvement in money laundering and its financial relationships with Donald Trump, and who mysteriously went missing a year before he was found dead. Or Sucheer Balaji, who was found dead of what authorities said was a self-inflicted gunshot wound, but whose parents' private investigation suggested he was shot in the back of the head at an angle he couldn't possibly have made himself. A month before he was found dead, Balaji had filed a complaint against his employer, OpenAI, for copyright infringement. Or, you know, Dorothy Kilgallen. And if you don't know, go back and listen to my two-part series from earlier this season on her storied life and death. And getting back to the story at hand, I might be less inclined to think something suspicious was going on around John Ashbrook's death if a judge hadn't sealed his autopsy. What was that about? If Ashbrook died of natural causes, if he just somehow started bleeding internally spontaneously as we are led to believe, what's with the secrecy? I don't know if there's some kind of poison or something that can cause internal bleeding, but is it possible that poison was found in Ashbrook's system and they couldn't risk that information getting out? If so, who would have poisoned him and why? What could be so threatening about a state representative running for U.S. representative? According to what I could find, his politics weren't particularly outrageous as far as conservative politics go. The American Conservative Union no longer has any entries about him, so I don't know what exactly contributed to a score of 97. Lauren Boebert has a score of 100. Indeed, he seemed more conservative than a lot of his fellow Republicans. None of this seems like cause to have him offed. And it's not like he was posing a huge threat to the Democratic Party, what with doing so dismally in the presidential primary of 72. And even if they thought he might be becoming a threat, it is really unlike either party to have a possible candidate assassinated. If that were a tactic, we'd be seeing a lot more promising politicians dropping dead out of nowhere. AOC, for example, would be in big trouble. It's hard to imagine any kind of foreign agent would have had cause to kill him either, though. It's not like he really had any sway over international politics. He was pissed at Nixon for opening up relations with communist China, but so were a lot of people, and I'm sure China did not give a damn about Ohio State Representative John Ashbrook. The only thing I could find on the internet about any kind of conspiracy theory surrounding Ashbrook's sudden and admittedly bizarre death was on a website from a dude who claimed to have worked for him and who was apparently trying to, quote, fight white genocide. It's not even worth going over what this nutcase has to say about it. Suffice to say, he blames the Jews. I can't even. Also, just before we continue, Ashbrook was replaced by his wife to finish out the last year of his term. Listen, if I were to die, do you think they would just replace me with my husband? I don't know who the they is in this scenario. Kurt wouldn't have the first idea where to start or how to do any of this. And all this is a podcast. Plus, you listeners would be like, what in the actual fuck is this bullshit? You wouldn't even replace a sandwich artist at Subway with their spouse. But when a politician dies, we're all just supposed to be okay with their spouse finishing out their term? Where is the logic? And don't even get me started on Lindsey Graham's sister being appointed to finish out his term. I don't know what planet everyone is on right now. Just because they have the same last name? It just goes to show, I guess, that none of it actually matters. I mean, it does matter, obviously. Local politics matters very much. I just mean, in the cosmic scheme of things. But, speaking of shared names, John Ashbrook's death was, in fact, not the only mysterious death in his family. After the break, we'll rewind a couple years to look at an even more suspicious death in the Ashbrook family. Strangers, healthy eating gets a lot simpler when you've already got quality ingredients ready to go. Instead of overthinking dinner, I can focus on making something I'll actually enjoy eating. ButcherBox helps make the healthy choice the easy choice. ButcherBox delivers 100% grass-fed beef, organic chicken, and wild-caught seafood, and more, all sourced to standards they can actually tell you about. They've already done the research and made the tough sourcing decisions, so all you have to do is decide what's for dinner. It's a little like having the neighborhood butcher everyone wishes they still had, someone who's incredibly particular about quality and sourcing, so you don't have to be. Every ButcherBox is customizable so you can choose the cuts and proteins that fit your routine. Whether you're grilling for friends, feeding the family on a Tuesday, or trying to avoid another expensive takeout order, you've already got great protein ready to go. I'm super into fish right now. I love knowing there is delicious, sustainable seafood in my fridge, so I'm not worried about what to make for dinner, and I know I can feed my family something healthy and delicious. If you're looking for an easier way to get great meals on the table, give ButcherBox a try. Go to butcherbox.com/unexplained to get $20 off your first box, plus your choice of free ground beef for life or free chicken thighs or top sirloins in every box for a year, with free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/unexplained. Again, that's butcherbox.com/unexplained. Be sure to use our link so they know we sent you. Okay, so Representative John Ashbrook died quite suddenly on April 24th, 1982. His autopsy was sealed, and no one, it seems, brought up the very obvious question. How the hell does someone who is apparently in pristine health just start hemorrhaging from the inside for no reason? And except for that one guy who took to the internet to blame the Jews, no one wondered if anything nefarious had happened. But just 2 years earlier, to the day of John's death, his brother, James Jim Ashbrook, was found dead out by the railroad tracks in a case that was never solved, nor somehow even really made the kind of waves one might expect the death of the brother of a sitting politician might make. On April 24th, 1980, Jim stopped off at Ohio Restaurant No. 2, actual name of the restaurant, for his regular weekday coffee meet with a dozen friends. Hold on. A dozen friends. Every morning? That sounds like my actual hell. Like, if I die today, I'm going to hell and having to have coffee with 12 people every weekday morning for the rest of eternity. It's too many people, and it's too early, and they probably only have weekdays in hell. God bless extroverts. You all are doing the hard work so the rest of us can stay home under the covers. Ohio Restaurant No. 2's owner, Basil Mozarkey, told the Press Gazette through tears, quote, "He came in and spoke to me and was a happy man with a newspaper. And he went to that big table where he and the others had coffee together all the time." End quote. A happy man with a newspaper. That's actually a beautiful little tribute. A few hours later, in the early evening, Jim's car was found abandoned near the railroad tracks. His body was then discovered some hours later by his own nephew, William Ashbrook III, the father of the William who emailed me. William III told the Gazette, quote, "I found the body. There were five of us in the car that went out to the road where his car had been found. Jeff and the others stayed in the car, and Don and I walked along the roadway. I saw him in the beam of my flashlight, and then I called Don over, and he stayed there while we drove to the funeral home and called the sheriff." End quote. Jim was fully clothed, and his wallet was missing. Apparently, William could tell he was dead before he even got near him. Several people said he was wearing different clothes than what he'd been seen wearing earlier that day. Early reporting on Jim's death was interesting. A day after he was found, The Advocate reported this, quote, "Police have refused comment of the method of strangulation and say they have no suspects in the case," end quote. However, the Gazette on the same day printed this, quote, "Licking County Coroner Robert Raker said, it appears, this is very unofficial, that the cause of death was blunt trauma to the skull. An autopsy is being performed at the Hamilton County Coroner's office," end quote. So, strangulation and or blunt force trauma to the head. For what it's worth, William, who emailed me with the story, said Jim had been beaten. I couldn't find anything to verify that. Then again, I couldn't find much at all about Jim's death. The Advocate also included this piece of information. Quote, "Columbus News reports state that the late James Ashbrook was believed to have been involved in gambling activity and was heavily in debt," end quote. I don't know, stranger, this feels like unnecessary information. Like, at this point, it sounds like rumor and speculation. Even if it was true, I feel like maybe they should have verified it before printing it. The Advocate similarly printed this, quote, "Rumors were reported that Ashbrook was attempting to sell his insurance firm," end quote. And so, stranger, naturally, the FBI had to stick its neck into the story. That's next. Strangers, this episode is brought to you by IQBar, our exclusive snack sponsor. IQBars are better for you, clean, plant protein bars packed with fiber and brain-boosting nutrients with zero added sugar. You no longer have to choose between healthy or delicious snacks. IQBar's plant-based protein bars are packed with high-quality ingredients to help keep you physically and mentally fit. You won't find any unrecognizable ingredients on their label. IQ bars are great for any diet, whether by choice or due to allergies. They're free from gluten, dairy, soy, GMOs, and artificial sweeteners. There's 9 delicious flavors, including my personal favorites, mint chocolate chip, toasted coconut chip, and peanut butter chip. With over 25,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are starting their days on the right foot with IQ Bar's brain and body-boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. Unlike a lot of protein bars that taste like chalk, IQ Bars are truly delicious. Plus, you can try their ultimate sampler pack to sample all their delicious flavors. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus get free shipping. To get your 20% off, text STRANGE to 64000. Text STRANGE to 64000. That's STRANGE to 64000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
In today's world, planning ahead isn't always top of mind, but not having life insurance can leave families facing difficult financial uncertainty during already emotional times. In many cases, loved ones are left managing expenses, debts, or long-term obligations without a clear plan in place. Life insurance is one way to help provide financial security and support when it's needed most. That's where Ethos comes in. Ethos makes getting life insurance fast and easy, and it's 100% online. You can get a quote within seconds, apply in minutes, and even get same-day coverage. There's no medical exam. You just answer a few simple health questions online, and coverage options are flexible with up to $3 million available and some policies starting at around $30 a month. Ethos has also earned strong customer feedback with a 4.9 out of 5-star rating on Trustpilot based on more than 5,500 reviews as of August 2026. Help protect your family with life insurance through Ethos. Get your instant quote today at ethos.com. That's ethos.com. Application times and rates may vary.
Turns out the FBI was already investigating Jim Ashbrook. I don't know why, and neither did his brother John. But it turns out the rumors of Jim's gambling habits and debts were true. According to a piece from the Daily Kent State on April 29th, quote, Representative John Ashbrook said he learned secondhand that his brother James was being investigated by the FBI at the time of his murder. The congressman did not indicate the reasons for the investigation, nor would Columbus FBI Chief Tom Mitchell or U.S. Attorney James Kissel of Cleveland discuss the probe. Representative Ashbrook said he was surprised by the reports linking his brother to big-time gamblers. End quote. As far as I know, though, the FBI doesn't generally investigate private citizens just because they have a gambling problem. And who these big-time gamblers were is also a mystery. And despite the intrigue of a possible connection to nefarious men and an FBI probe, news about Jim's death just kind of fizzled out. Reporting on the investigation into his murder was slim. Jim Ashbrook's murder was never solved. One minute he was a happy man with a newspaper, and the next he was found dead in a field wearing different clothes than what he'd been seen wearing earlier, and everyone seems to have just kind of shrugged. And I don't know, call me paranoid, but doesn't it strike anyone else as odd that rumors about his gambling debt made it into the very first reports of his death? Maybe I'm making too much of this. It just feels a little bit like planting seeds. Lots of people have gambling debt and don't end up dead. In some ways, it reminds me of the reporting on Dorothy Kilgallen's death that painted her as a booze and pills hound. Speaking of which, I got a lot of great feedback on those episodes about her and heard from people who had always thought she died of an overdose and believed the stories that she was an alcoholic and an addict and were glad to hear she was indeed not those things. But also, what a shame that's how the media portrayed her and, as a result, how many have perceived her since. Also, while we're on the subject, a listener wrote in to tell me that while she normally agrees that coverage of what women wear is gratuitous, in the case of Kilgallen, her wardrobe was extremely important to her, and she used it intentionally. The listener wrote, quote, You made a comment about author Mark Shaw's comments about Kilgallen's looks and clothes at the coronation of Queen Elizabeth. The focus on her looks is totally unnecessary, as it almost always is, but Kilgallen's fashion was a very deliberate and interesting choice that she made throughout her lifetime, with the coronation outfit becoming a famous part of Kilgallen's TV history after she wore it a few days later on What's My Line. Kilgallen's choice to maintain a striking, feminine fashion, despite beginning her career in the often gritty world of crime reporting, spoke to her poise, her confidence in herself, and the way she interacted with the world. The way that women, particularly powerful women, have used fabric and fashion as a means of freedom and statement throughout history is a really fascinating topic on its own. The word spinster, for instance, comes from women who spun thread and wove fabric, as it was the only way for unmarried women to make a real living at the time and gave these women freedom that would have been unattainable otherwise. As another example, suffragettes' white outfits were a choice that showed their standing in society and lent respectability to their cause, as well as created a major striking cognitive dissonance with the public when they saw pictures of the suffragettes being arrested, end quote. I love my listeners, those that share interesting perspectives like this, alongside those who trust me with their compelling family stories. So, back to this story. To be fully transparent, without submitting a bunch of FOIA requests, which I have neither the time nor the wherewithal to do, there's not a lot more I can say about these Ashbrook family deaths. However, William's email to me contained this, quote, "My father tells me that there were so many rumors flying around town at the time about who killed Jim. He was a known gambler and had affairs with some married men's wives. There was even the rumor that John, his brother the congressman, had him killed because he was going to run for president, which he eventually did in the primary against Nixon, and Jim was causing issues with his unsavory habits," end quote. It's weird, though, that once the rumors of his gambling were confirmed, the newspapers didn't seem interested in continuing to cover the story. The news cycle in 1980 was a lot slower than it is today, and one would think a story like this might have dominated local headlines for quite some time. His brother John, it seems, learned that he was linked to, quote, big-time gamblers. Who exactly, though, and why didn't the papers pursue that lead? Why didn't the papers pursue John's death more closely when he died suddenly 2 years later from an issue he definitely should not have had unless someone fed him milk laced with crushed glass? And who would have done that? And why? And why was his autopsy sealed? Stories like these are frustrating to witness, let alone, I'm sure, process as a loved one. As humans, we listen in search of conclusions, or at least takeaways that feel like them. But when the lives of two brothers' deaths are unexplained, that leaves a lot of directions to pursue in search of the complete truth. And for that, I have to shout out William IV for reaching out in the rather unexpected direction of my inbox. It takes vulnerability and a generous spirit to share the facts and gaps scaffolding painful memories, and the motivation to get another set of eyes on this story is honorable. Who doesn't want to help their dad find peace in the answers to a story that's gone unsolved for generations now? I can only hope hearing about it on this podcast brings solace to any Ashbrook family members listening. Even in the absence of clear conclusions, discussing these matters dignifies the lives of those they concern, and maybe even keeps the fire lit in pursuit of what really happened. Next time on Strange and Unexplained. On July 1st, 1981, five people were brutalized in their home on Wonderland Drive in the Hollywood Hills. The whodunit that unfolded involved some of Hollywood's seediest characters, including a man who was best known for what was in his pants. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grabbag Collab. Special thanks to Grabbag executive producer level member Richard Nacy. This episode was written by me, Daisy Egan, with research by Keely Hies. Editorial help from Becca DiGregorio and sound design and engineering by Jeff Devine. Music by Epidemic and Blue Dot Sessions. If you'd like to support the show, please consider becoming a member of Grabbag Collab. We have built an incredible community of listeners who support a small, profit-sharing, woman and non-binary-owned business. At Grabbag, we're committed to giving a platform to voices who might otherwise get overlooked by bigger networks. Plus, all our contributors get to keep ownership of their content. It's a whole new approach to podcasting. Come check it out at grabbagcollab.com. For just $4 a month or $40 a year, you can get Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. And for just $8 or $80 a year, you'll get all the shows Grabbag has to offer, including my other shows, Dear Daisy and Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, as well as Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries, The Catalyst, Tales of the Resistance, What If They're Wrong, and all of our quarterly shows. You can even sign up to join our live recordings. We have book clubs, live hangs, watch parties, and more. If you're feeling extra generous, you can sign up at the $50 level for even more perks, including all our shows and extras, and have your name read in the credits of our shows, head to grabbagcollab.com today to join. To suggest an episode for Strange and Unexplained, you can email me directly at contact@strangeandunexplainedpod.com or go to strangeandunexplainedpod.com and fill out the contact form. You can follow me on Instagram at SNUPod or Daisy Egan and join the Facebook page to be a part of the conversation. Thanks so much for listening, and stay strange.